And they said, well, you're not qualified. I said, I'm as qualified as the person that's in that job now, because he didn't know nothing now. And he still doesn't. But they seem to forget there's people that do know. Those are the people you hire to back you up. You know, I'd get myself a good secretary and a good lawyer. That's all I needed. The one to defy something that the contracts had to be wrote up, they'd have to be. But then you just don't get any lawyer. You get a labor lawyer, you know. And you get a good legal secretary that knows how to interpret it for you. And if you can talk to people, that's the main thing. It's not bullying yourself or pushing yourself. You've got to sit down. And if you see a man, another man, or an employer, whoever, you get down the nitty-gritty with him, and he'll respect you if you've got something to say. And he'll let him listen, and then he'll listen to you, too. And when you go in there, like you get a whole bunch of them and say, well, and they get the media behind them now, which is a bad mistake, because the media only says what they want to say. It's never half the truth in any way. And then they get all this going before to sell papers. And the animosity is already laid before you even get to the bargaining table. I did an awful lot of bargaining. I liked that the best part of the union. Of any of my union work was bargaining for wages.
Oh, yeah?
Working conditions. I found that the most stimulating because it was challenging. There you're dealing right with the right person, the employer. Naturally, he's not going to give up everything easily. It's going to cost him every time he gives you something. But if you recognize and you sit down with a little bit of respect for one another, you can come out. One man that used to negotiate with us all the time, a hotel man, he ended up with shingles every time he went into negotiations. By the time he came out, he was just full of shingles.
The employer.
It was just as hard on him as it was on us. In fact, one time I went in there negotiating. I was pregnant when I came out. I had the baby already. We were still negotiating. But it was a good, you know. But times have changed. There's not this trust. It's big cooperation nowadays. They decide we're going to give them so much percentage, and that is. But the owners don't have the feeling for their employees because they've either employed too many, and they haven't got the time, or they just don't give a damn. But their fathers before, they knew everybody by their first name, and they worked with them, and they cared. You know. But that's the way it's been the past.
When you negotiated, would you always go in as part of the team?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Hotel men on one side and the union on the other.
And what kind of role would you play in negotiations?
Well, you don't say too much, in fact, unless they ask you a direct question, which they very seldom did, because your president or the financial secretary was the one who was. But if they had to be guided, which sometimes did, they come and ask you something. But you stick there unless somebody asks you a direct question, unless they let you answer it, too. They don't always let you answer. Mm-hmm. But you were there to push, and you were there to see how it was done. If you had to go back with a nickel, you knew why you went back with a nickel. It wasn't something that was, say, here's the contract, now sign it, we want your vote for it. You were there to see, well, this is, you can go back and say to the people, we couldn't get no more than a nickel, we were lucky to get it, and tell them why. Mm-hmm. But if you don't participate or have somebody on your side, you don't believe them anyway. You think, well, we've been sold down the river again.
Mm-hmm. Were there any kinds of job actions that took place?
Oh, lots of threats. The King Neptune was a very hard organized place to organize. They fought to hammer and tong not to join a union. Yeah, that's about the biggest in Westminster, I think. The rest, if you got in the hotel industry, it's a little different, you see, because you're automatically, your liquor end is union from the day it opens. So the day you decide to, you don't open without that being a union shop, eh? So therefore, they can get to you through that end of it. And there wasn't too much hassle because they want their bar opened. So they'd sign a catering contract without too much difficulty. But with the King Neptune, what they did, I worked there when they brought in a union man, and that union man, unfortunately, taught women how to be bartenders. When they knew everything he did, he got fired, and they kept the girls and paid them maybe a nickel more, if they got that, and never had a union in there, until finally it got to the point where they weren't giving them very good food or, you know, benefits. They decided, well, now a union is going to help us, because sure, they were going to take $6 a month off us for union dues. But they had no coverage at all in that place, and they could work themselves to death, and nobody really cared, which they still do. Mm-hmm. But now they got a chance to have somebody work for them. Because that's one thing about those people made a lot of money, and the staff made it for them.
Okay. So you would be in on negotiations. What kind of elected and paid positions did you have for the union?
I didn't have nothing. I only got... I was on their executive board, and you get your union dues back at the end of the year. Or I was sent on conventions, which I had to run for and be voted for. and I would get that. I went to 2 international conventions. One, I went, paid my own way down because I was grievancing for another union sister of mine, Mrs. Penny Pawnee. She was the ex-business agent there, which was fired, and it was an awful mess. But we went down and took on our international.
Can you talk about that a bit? There's been a history of people going down from Canada and taking on the international.
Right. Well, with her, I knew for a fact that she had been sick one time, and she sent a, it all started with this, a registered letter to the union saying that she could not be there because as a business agent she must be there to attend these meetings and that. And they said that they never got the registered letter. Well, that letter had to be signed for, and it was got, and it was buried. And of course eventually she lost her job. And she was the only one that ever fought for the women because she was a woman business agent and they just didn't want her around. And then it came to elections where she backed somebody else and not the financial secretary and the president. She was fighting and backing another slate. And of course they brought into her personal life was questionable, and that I resented very much because what she did or who she did, or you know, it wasn't really her, it was her husband, it was none of their business. As you know, nobody knew their wives, did they? But they wanted her out and they got her out, but it was the way they did it. And we, when I, then I decided to run against Ed Carlson at the time. And it all started, we used to have free picnics for children. And we used to have Christmas for the kids too, eh? Which I was on the Standing Social Committee. Well, they decided to do away with all that because it got too expensive for it. They said that one up the coast couldn't come down to our picnic, but they could have had one up there if they wanted to, you know, sort of thing. And they took everything away except a golf tournament. Now, there's only a very limited people that could go to a golf tournament, and it would be the top officers and to select a few. And I got really mad, so I said, fine, I would hold a dance, and I would raise money for the picnic for the children, and we put on our own. Nothing to do with the union, so I did. And I called it the Waitress's Bartender's Dance. It didn't say my local, didn't say anything about a union. But so then the union came back and said that I must turn my money, proceeds, over to the union within 30 days, because that's what the bylaws said. And I said no. So then they decided they were going to take away my rights. And they wanted me to fight through the international. Well, I didn't. I went through the Supreme Court of BC, because I knew that if I went through the international, I could be buried there too. And like the judge said, I had 2 judges. I won 1 Supreme Court to let me run action, and if they didn't do the same thing to me within 2 days, I was back in it again. And I won that one too. But in the meantime, it cost me $2,000 for a principal. But I did make money on the dance. And when we had the best time, and you know, I held 2 dances. And of course, it takes a lot of money to have a picnic, to rent a park and have all this stuff. But mostly everybody donated. And that's one time I found out that people really rallied around you. And even the bartenders, everybody donated prizes. The breweries donated prizes, free prizes, you know, for the door prizes. Everybody did. But just because I never turned my money over, and they didn't want the job anyway, so I didn't see why should I turn my money over to them. So we set it up. Then I wasn't just the one. There was 3 signing officers for that money at the bank. But in the end, the money went to Mrs. Pawnee's cause, because she had to pay her lawyers. She was fighting 8352. They were suing each other. It was an awful case. Really, it ended up in court, and they bought a new building up here. They live on in Vancouver there now, on Hastings, you know, way up in Hastings there. They got that union office, mm-hmm. And we found out that we traced it, that the union, that building was never even registered in the union's name. The members didn't even have nothing to do. It was registered in the offices in Monahan's name, but nobody seemed to care. Nobody cared about it. We went, and they said we were just rebels, trying to disturb everything. We were poor losers, but nobody cared. But we spent an awful lot of time. Their houses were broken into. They were harassed. So I've had the good side of a union, and I've seen the bad side of what they can do. They can extort everything to their liking. People don't even know what's going on because they don't care. They just don't care.
So this sort of fight went on in isolation, in a sense, from the ranks.
Yeah, but I got a lot of paper coverage. I got some clippings upstairs, from the Columbian paper, you know. That they watched it, see, and there was a lot of people watching it too, you know, and a lot of people. And then you get the feeling, well, who says it was an honest vote? You know, you have your scrutineers there, but how many people were eligible? How many people got a ballot, you know, that were, and you were there, but it's like everything else. It can be fixed nowadays. But I was satisfied, and I did the best I could with what I had, and I felt, well, at least somebody tried.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know if I'd do it again. I guess I would. I felt good. I felt good. I felt good in myself.
So Penny County and yourself were active women. Were there other women who were active in the movement?
Not in our local. Penny County now, she still works with the Teamsters. Okay. She's under a Mrs. Gornick.
Yeah.
I think she's the only woman business agent for the Teamsters. And I think her job's pretty hard too. Not an easy thing. I think if anybody could say there was discrimination in the woman's file, would be her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You talked a little bit before about this sort of attitude that you ran into, that because you were a woman, that you would vote, with the male leadership.
That's right.
What other kinds of things would come up?
Well, not too much, but they just expected it. It was taken for granted. You were never asked, or say, well, they'd hand you a piece of paper and say, well, this is our slate. But you may not like what was on that slate, and that's the way I felt. I felt if the guy could do the job, that's the man I wanted.
And would this be for Labor Council or Fed?
For anything, yeah, for the Fed or Labor Councils. Now, I'm not saying that, like, even the communists, there were some people that could do the job. Mm-hmm. But, like, once they get the foot in the door, you don't get rid of them. And they train their people. They just don't send somebody there. They spend years of training and study. Mm-hmm. But like I said, they had the best speakers. But nobody seemed to care. But I know that with the Vancouver Labor Council, was all the top people retired. So the ones that came back up to replace them, the other delegates, weren't knowledgeable enough. They're just starting out, But like the plumbers, they were very good for that. But then Russ Senderloy, he went back east. I think he's operating out of Winnipeg now.
Did the communists or the NDP or the CCF have a presence in your union? Did they operate in there?
No. Not in our local. I fully believe that in our local we backed the NDP, mm-hmm. Because that's the Workers' Party sort of thing. There again, I really believe that people vote to who they want. You can sort of suggest, it's like taking somebody to a dentist, you can suggest it, but they're not going to tell you who they're going to vote for. And why should they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But as in Westminster, it's unbelievable just how the people say it's the Workers' Party here. It's always been NDP, old CCF. Ray Eddy was here until I don't know how long. I remember him as a kid even being in there, So. It's really a very strong hold in Westminster, but then you've got IWA so strong in Westminster, too.
Okay, that's another question. Did you find that in terms of being a union worker, that people who come into your restaurant who would be maybe the most sympathetic to the women who worked there were other union people?
No, not necessarily. Once in a while, years ago, they used to ask you for your union button, and some people would even tip you if you had your union button on. No, not necessarily, because most of the people didn't know anything. You see, only your few people who were educated, the few that they picked for safety committees or stuff like that. But other people just paid because they had to be in a union, and they paid that privilege. When you had to fight in the 30s for it, that was different. You were bettering yourself, and they were thinking, today when they have a thing, they shut down a whole waterfront. It means nothing when they all sit home, don't they? That's it. Your top officers do the work. But how many individuals get in and fight anymore? Where before in the 30s,
What kind of things did you do in the union to try and get people to come to meetings, to get involved?
Oh, we did everything. We threatened to charge them, assess them $5 if they didn't come. I think some even paid $5. We used to have parties afterwards. We'd go for a bowling tournament after a union meeting. We sat around and we went for a picnic, anything. And one time there, to get the women interested, our local used to even have dinners, free dinners, when we were small. Anything to get them interested. Nobody was. Hardly anybody showed up even for a free dinner. They just don't care. Like I said, they only care when it comes to negotiation and what they're going to get for themselves.
Do you think that people didn't care in part because of the kinds of pressures on them outside of the workplace, like
at home?
Yeah.
It would probably stem back to, if it was a husband and a wife was trying to get interested, he'd say, well, your place is at home, you're working, isn't that enough? What are you going to get involved for? It's not going to do you anything anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this was probably one of the biggest pressures. Or the woman wasn't educated enough. She didn't know how to speak. Most people are afraid to speak unless they think that they can speak properly. One time I used to have such an impediment I couldn't speak myself. But if I got mad enough, I could speak, and I was mad quite frequently.
Right, so that makes the whole question of sort of training people.
That's right, you know. I mean, I know a lot of people that you could feel their pain, you know, they wanted to say something, but they couldn't, they were scared to say something.
Yeah.
But then I always give the poor guy the credit. We used to have one man, and he used to get up to the mic. Well, nobody understood what he said if he was there 15 minutes, but at least I used to respect him because the poor man tried. You know, but no, the women, and I figure like when they had the meetings on Sunday, now I was lucky, I worked Sundays, but my boss always gave me my Sunday off to go to the union meeting. My boss was really good that way. He says, okay, you represent this place, you go. And I never had no reprisals because I had to attend a meeting, or they always let me go for a convention. You know.
And was there a steward structure in the union that was pretty...
Well, it was in my place. Every place that we tried to get a shop steward we succeed pretty well, I think, too. But then you had to give them a bit of training. But there again, on Columbia Street, they all came to me because they knew that I was strong, because my boss, you know, he didn't harass me for any union activities I had, where maybe in another place the boss would say, well, what's the matter with you? What do you want? Do you think I'm going to give you my time? You know, and if he knew if he had any trouble... he'd get scared because he didn't know how deep the trouble went. And you mentioned union, and they'd all run out the back door practically. So I think that was one of the reasons, you know, I did so well at it.
Mm-hmm. Was there, what kind of attitude did most of the bosses in the restaurants have towards the unions? Did they try to sort of have the sense that, well, we're all working here together, and being in a union is destructive to that kind of attitude?
Well, of course, because even at those times, a union cost the money. A union was, they were telling him how he could operate his business. And they resent it, they still do. Mm-hmm. But it's a way of life and they tolerate it. But it all depends who you had with a shop steward, if they knew what they were doing, and how much pressure they were putting on management. But on the whole, in the restaurants, like now I don't know about Vancouver, I know Westminster and I know Columbia Street. Well, they're pretty fair people. But naturally they're out for themselves. And you had to fight for everything you got, but if you wanted it bad enough, you didn't mind fighting for it, you know. But mostly it came, they got their fringe benefits on the petticoat of somebody else who had worked very hard for it, you know. But I, like I said, I had no trouble. My boss respected it. He knew he had to have a union there, and he felt, well, I might just as well work with it as against it.
Were there women who were in the leadership of the union, both nationally and internationally?
In the States, but not here. Women, it's just reversed itself down there. Here it was all men who were BAs and the financial secretary and presidents, where down there it was all men, all women. There's Gertie Sweet, I think she's vice president, and I think she must be 80 years old. I don't know if they retired yet. And in all through California, this is my first big shock when I went to an international convention. I expect to see nothing surrounded with men, and it's just the opposite, because Canada is so small. I mean, they can't even come across the border, really, you know, for a convention. But down there, you see all these massive women, and they do the jobs that men do up here.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of attitudes did they have towards other women unionists?
Well, the feeling I got, of course... You see, we're Canadian, and we have different feelings, really. They were so used to having that job, I don't think it meant anything to them.
Yeah.
Where we were stunned, somebody was getting ahead in this world, you know, and recognized. But then those women went in years, they must have been the ones that did all the fighting for people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get people to follow you. I could take up and sign 50 people up to join my own union. I mean, you can get people to follow, that's no problem. But you can't get people to work, and they won't help you.
Was it hard for women? Did women try and take on national leadership positions here in the union?
Not in Canada, no. Yeah. It wouldn't do any good because ours was international in the first place. You'd have to take on your own local and win an election there. And I can truthfully say I don't think that'll ever come a time in my time that I'll see it. It's too highly a paid job. And it is more difficult now than it used to be.
So, you mean there's a real sense that women shouldn't be doing that kind of profession?
That's right. I mean, a woman for like now, she'd have to get anywhere now, I would say, she'd have to go to university and be something, you know, qualified for that line if she knew she was going to go take it up in school and learn all she can there and then go in as a business agent, if they'll let you in and hire you. And if only one of those people may have a chance and learn all she can and keep her mouth shut and then run for an office.
So are the business agents hired by the union?
By the union offices, yes.
So they weren't elected representatives?
No.
So was there ever conflict between the elected representatives and hired business agents?
I imagine so, but that would be held in, who would know, way? It'd be done in there. Of course, your top officers are all elected. You know, like your vice president, your president and your vice president, and a financial secretary, and the recording secretary, that's all elected officers. But then they also hold that double position where they are business agents too.
You were elected to the Joint Executive Board.
That's right.
What was that and what role did you play?
Well, that's when all the unions, the top echelon of all unions, all locals, like we had three locals here, got together once a month to discuss the business, to involve all unions.
So what kind of issues would it deal with? Negotiations?
Negotiations, something, negotiating a new hotel or wanting money from us, a different local wanting needed help for organizing anything. Could be anything. Anything that came out of the BC Fed or the Vancouver Labour Councils.
Did you work with any other unions in an especially close way?
No.
And... Oh, right, okay. The union had master contracts.
Right.
How are they put together?
Well, for the thing, usually that was done with the financial secretary, and we'd have a committee, like a standing negotiating committee. And in the meetings prior to time to go for a new contract, the membership would tell us what they wanted at the union meeting, and we'd make a draft from their suggestions. And then we'd get together, and then we'd decide which stood a chance to get anything, and we'd delete what wasn't, we knew we never were going to get anywhere with, and then we'd work on what we had. And that's how it was brought up together.
Were there any special kinds of issues around shift work or benefits?
Oh, yes, like split shift. Shifts, you know. No, nobody ever wants to work a split shift. Mm-hmm. But it's a very necessity in catering parts. And then there'd be, like, now we have the 4, 6, and 8 hour shifts recognized, eh? Which is the necessity, too. Some people, they don't like it, they want to work a 4, or some want to work an 8. But with the wages being what they are today, you just can't have bodies standing around to please them. So that 6 hour, I may only need somebody for 6.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And were there any problems with a master contract for the industry?
Oh, yes, getting it together was a big problem, you know. And like, everybody thought that their idea was the best. But then you'd have guidelines, like from the first contract that was laid down, it was thought out and done and approved, and our contracts must be approved by the international too. They read them too. So it was never, you didn't take that much out of every contract. It was just maybe a little wording changed here or there, or money figures were changed. It wasn't that difficult, but you get some stupid jerk that thought he had the best idea of it all, and you still had to write it down and take it to your committee and see what they thought of it.
Did the union have a hiring hall system at all?
Yes. Yeah.
Was that important in keeping closed shops?
Yes, it was. And that was the one place the employer, it worked just as well for the employer as it did the employee. Instead of dialing around having a book with people's names and going through to get somebody, he just phoned the one place, and of course they should have had people to send to him. And you knew that those people were union.
Was that important for women?
Yes, well, women didn't have too much of that. Maybe a little there again in Vancouver. I wasn't familiar because I just dealt with Westminster here. We didn't have really anything, only if it came to a banquet work, because everybody was steadily employed in this. But then as women went in as mixologists, then they'd have to go the same route too.
Were there any special contract demands in particular that women tended to focus in on?
Not so much, no. All they cared about was their wages. That was always the most. And of course, a split shift was always a big contention. And holidays. But then you see, now holidays are worked out by seniority.
Mm-hmm.
And so, though I have a situation this year where a girl is pulled, when I had a schedule slated for holidays, she says, well, I'll hold off a bit, because she didn't know what her husband was going to work. So a week ago, she puts her time in. Now, three other girls have spoken for that same holiday, but she's going to pull, well, I have seniority. Now, what are those other two people supposed to do that's already made plans for those days? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not fair. Yeah.
Do you feel that there's any women in particular that should be mentioned in terms of the contribution they made to the union?
Well, Josephine Halleck was one. And strangely enough, I never bothered too much with women because I didn't, but I'm sure there must have been somebody in the garment workers that they, those people really suffered. Yeah. And like I said, as far as I'm concerned, out of our local was Penny Pownley. She was the one because she took a terrible beating.
When you look back on the whole process, do you see it as having been something that helped to strengthen the position of working people and women, the kind of involvement that you have?
Oh, yes.
So you feel positive?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I feel so positive that you couldn't do without a union. Mm-hmm. I feel sad because the way it works today. It's big business. Like, I try to tell the people, I said, you own that. That's your business. That's like if you own a big corporation, you go and say, but they're not interested. It's their money that's making this union. But they don't care. They don't understand. They got, there's no competition. You know, they just don't care. And it's sad. Really sad. You know? And in fact, it really infuriates me that they...
Is there anything else that you'd like to...
I really do think it's going to get better. For women, they've come such a long, long way. Really, I think the situations now, I'm not speaking for industrial or anything like that, but a woman is recognized. They know she's going to be here. It's not something you're going to sweep under the counter anymore. You know, she's here and she's going to work. She's part of the working force. Yes, they have special problems, but not really that many that they should be classified any different from a man. And they do, if they do the work, they're qualified for, and then they should get equal pay.